Frank Anderson is here. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwab, a Tuesday night edition. Great to have you with me wherever you are joining us from in the great state of Wisconsin. A couple texts came in. Jim from Appleton says, bad smell, vomit. Yeah, that's definitely up there. Jack from Merrimack says, worst smell? How about the so-called corpse flower? Enough said. I don't know the corpse flower. Frank, you ever hear the corpse flower?
Sure, it smells like a corpse.
Well, I figured, but some corpses might smell good, though. You don't know. It depends how long they've...
Well, I do know. They don't smell very good.
But... You've been around your share of corpses? Something you want to tell us? all right, we're talking Wisconsin one-hit wonders. We segued to Wisconsin, specific one-hit wonders. Frank has vast knowledge of this. Let's go with another one. This is another clip you sent me earlier. Mule Skinner by the Fendermen. This is, let's
Mule
play that.
Mule Skinner Blues.
Oh, is that what it's called? I thought it was just Mule Skinner. Okay. All right, rockabilly duo, the Fendermen. Here we go.
Good morning, Captain. Well, good morning to you. Will you meet another Mule Skinner? Down on your new mud run.
I'm kind of torn on that one, Frank, because I really like, I love the guitar. It's a great song, but they, that kind of yodeling thing they do. I don't get that.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Yodeling. That's beautiful. And it's so much from where they recorded it. You know, I think I told you before my aunt Lois Anderson was a accordionist. And so is my cousin Susie Anderson. And so is my cousin Woody Woodward, a yodeling drummer. There's yodeling down there in southeast Dane County, Wisconsin, which is where the Fendermen lived at the time they recorded this. And it's two guys plugged into one amp, and he's singing straight up into one mic. Amazing sound. Johnny Cash loved them so much, he took them on tour. Neil Young said, that's the song that switched that flipped his switch and really made him go rock and roll.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. And one of them is from the 715 Niagara, Wisconsin, up in my hood, close to my hood. And the other one is from Stoughton, I guess. So they're like representing different parts of Wisconsin. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But at the time, you know, they're just gigging around Stoughton, Wisconsin. And when that song broke, it broke big. And number five in the nation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so.
Very cool. Those guys are great. And it's so raw. And, you know, no second take. It's one take. To all musicians out there who are listening to you, quit futzing with your recordings. Do it once and move on. That's all. That's great advice.
Yeah, but that sounds, for one recording, or for a one take, they did sound amazing. I mean, that was great sound. 50,
it's
60
fantastic.
Years old. Yeah.
Yeah. Only one microphone in the studio and straight to two-track tape. There you go.
Gosh, that's fantastic. All right, we've got one more one-hit wonder. And this is a great song, too. I remember this. This is not as old as the other two. Conrad, let's play a couple minutes of Better Days.
My shoes, my toes are busted. My kitchen says my bread is molded. I got a good job at the dollar store. One foot in the hole, one foot getting deeper with a broken mirror
That's a great song. I love. I remember liking that when it came out. That's Citizen King from Milwaukee, and that song made it to number 25. Nice find for tonight, Frank.
And also in so many movies, beginning with Mystery Men in 1999, but since then, constant play in other media.
Yeah,
really a bigger song than the number 25 lets on. And so interesting, the band was great. I knew half of them, and a member of that band went on to found Danger Bird Records in LA, and that was he was a player for a while.
Huh.
And two members of the band, the DJ Malcolm and the drummer DJ were from Denmark, Wisconsin.
Oh, man.
And DJ, the drummer, went on to play drums in the road band for Peter Buffett's stirring tribal musical spirit, The Seventh Fire. There you go.
That is so, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to these songs earlier, and these guys are from Wisconsin, and at one time, and this fascinates me about the one-hit wonder, more so than bands that had consistent hits in the top 40 or whatever. They were like on top. They mattered and they were relevant in this industry and they were on top of the world and for a yeah. short time. But that's a pretty cool thing. But it what makes me sad almost, Frank, is that you had to send two clips of them, like the Fenderman and Underground Sunshine, for me to even know who they were. Like, I've heard the songs, but they're just forgotten by most of the population, and I find that so sad.
It is sad, but rest assured, the Fendermen are still dynamite to a segment of the European record collecting and rock and roll fandom in Europe and in Japan. So Underground Sunshine are forgotten, but they're still great.
Even if you have a hit, you're forgotten. That just seems wrong to me. Because
what's the old saying? You need at least two hits to play the carnival circuit or the state fair circuit. Not the carnival circuit. That's what I play, but the state fair circuit.
Who are some of the? You just said you played with these guys from Madison.
Yeah,
and you knew half the band of Citizen King. Who?
I know everybody I've talked about so far.
Yeah, and you've played with really amazing people. And I know you've done a ton of work with Butch Vig but aside from Butch, Butch is great. Who have you played with that we haven't heard of that you can talk about tonight and give them some love, if you
the
will?
The Hispanic Boys.
Oh yeah. I remember them. Sure.
Famous for taking Sinead O'Connor's place on Saturday Night Live when the show removed her, the Hispanic Boys subbed in.
Milwaukee band, right?
I played on one of their albums. I'm all over it like a wet rag. And I did some shows with them in Chicago and the record release in Milwaukee. And I was checking out to see if they had any chart action. They didn't, but they did really well. They're at the top of their game. And for a moment there, like you said earlier, they mattered. And people were talking about them. And there was a buzz.
There was a buzz. One year I was performing at Summerfest in the stand-up tent, which was a miserable venue. I mean, I'm glad they did it, but it was just not a great place like it was for music. And I remember there was just a buzz, and everybody was going to see at one of the stages the Hispanic Boys. And they were kind of a big deal. So are they still touring? Do they still play?
No, not at all.
Okay.
They completely dropped out of the music scene. They were Tom and Ian Spanik, a father and son duo.
Oh.
And Tom Spanik passed away somewhat recently. And Ian is a school superintendent. And he has eschewed show business completely. My favorite new E word. I don't even know if I pronounced it correctly. I've read it a lot.
It used to be ebullient, so I'm glad you have a new one. That's funny.
But that's what happened. And yeah.
And it reminds me of the, you know, how cool is your superintendent or your principal? It's like when Homer Simpson was after the dean, that crusty old dean, and he used to be the bass player for the Pretenders. He's like, come into my office if you're ever stressed out, you know. So we just talked about some pretty big, you know, you're very tied into the music community, very respected musician. When did you get to a point, Frank, where you were like the guy people called? Because I think I've told you in the past, I've seen all these music documentaries or whatever. And it's like, oh, there's Frank. Oh, there's Frank again. Like, you're everywhere. When did that happen for you?
When I was 17, it started.
Really?
I made more money as a musician when I was 17 than I ever did again. Just playing bars in Wisconsin. And word got out, I guess, and I was suddenly playing on albums at age 17 and driving down to Chicago to be on some, you know, not huge hits, but
yeah,
album, you know, things that are available in stores at least and at that time. And yeah, it started there. And then I had a bit of a meltdown at age 21, I think. I threw my pedal steel out of hotel window.
Oh, man.
I was three stories up. No, it was funny. It was weird.
That's rock and roll.
Yeah. Well, I used to beat it up on stage and throw it up in the air and play it upside down in my younger days. And I was trying to be the Pete Townsend. And it worked. Some nights it didn't work. And some nights it was comic and backfired. And, you know, but it was really fun. I got sick of the instrument at age 21 because I'd been playing nonstop from 15 to then and playing nights, insane nights, you know, 200 plus a year. And
wow.
Yeah. And I wanted to do something else, and I dropped it for a while. And then came back again. And when I came back, Butch Vig was my friend. Butch Vig was starting to record bands in Madison, and it was lucky that you know, I coincided with that.
Yeah, but was it the amount of instruments you played, or was it just that you were so good at the ones you did play, or a combination of both? Obviously, you're easy to work with
really,
too. I'm sure that
you
helped.
You know, I've played guitar a lot for a lot of artists, regular guitar, not pedal steel, and it's either or. But okay. My main instrument will always be pedal steel, and that's what I do. And it's just that, just one instrument.
Ah, that's pretty. I think you're doing okay.
Although I played accordion on a lot of albums.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. Great to have you with me on this Thursday night, the last summer Thursday of the year here in Wisconsin as Labor Day creeps ever closer. But we are going to talk about some of the fun things in life that bring us together, like laughing and TV and movies. And we have a great next guest to help us do that. He's got a really cool documentary coming out. I think it's September 13th. It's called Just a Bit Outside, and it's about the 82 Brewers. And he joins us now over the stream, Sean Hannish. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Pete. How you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you. It's really nice to meet you and great to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's great to meet you, too. I really appreciate you having me on to talk a little Just a Bit Outside.
Happy to do it. We were laughing about that had to come from Bob Uecker. It couldn't have just been parallel thinking. But if it was, either way, it's great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, it came from you. Without a doubt.
So All right, so where are you joining us from tonight? Are you in Wisconsin getting ready for the premiere? Are you still in California?
No, I travel to Wisconsin in a week from tomorrow. Okay. Get ready for the big premiere and all the media and the release. Currently, I'm talking to you from my home office in Pasadena, California.
Oh, I love Pasadena. Do you find everybody, I lived in LA for 14 years, and everyone was like, oh, Pasadena, it's like just like the Midwest. Do you find it to be that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've lived in a number of places, Santa Monica, Hollywood, Palos Verdes. This is the most like the Midwest. It has a lot of Midwest transplants.
Yeah.
It's also, you know, frankly, it's the least affected by, you know, Hollywood. And so it's a lot of great people on my street and in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's a lot like, you know, where I came from.
Nice. And you're from Wisconsin, Sean? Are you a native?
I'm a native, you know, born in Milwaukee, okay. Raised in Brookfield, went to the University of Wisconsin for undergrad. So
excellent.
Yeah. The whole cannoli.
Very cool. Well, you have this new film. Tell us all about Just a Bit Outside.
Well, okay. It's a 2-hour documentary that really gets into detail and tells the story of the magical season of 1982. Now, a lot of us are going to remember it or have heard about it. I was a 14-year-old boy sitting in the stands that summer with my family. Really fortunate. My family had season tickets. So what we did almost every day is we go to the ballpark together. And it was great for our family, but it was also great to feel this incredible community of fans of the Brewers from Milwaukee and around Wisconsin. I went to about 60 games that season.
Wow.
Regular season and playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, I really lived and breathed it, and I got to know from afar the amazing characters on this team. And there are so many of them. It's, you know, it's Gorman, it's Paul Molitor, it's Robin Yount, it's Raleigh Fingers and Ted Simmons and Ben Ogilvie and Cecil Cooper. And anyway, just this, I mean, a lot of them are Hall of Famers, but yeah. The nice thing is they're all so down to earth. And so, you know, the story, again, it begins in 82 and all the expectations that we as a fan and they as players had. And they, you know, as we start at the beginning of the film, their goal is to win the World Series. They know they have the talent. And if for those of us who remember, the first 2 months go terribly. They fall flat on their faces, and we're in second to last place in early June. And so they fire the manager, and they hire the hitting coach, Harvey Keene.
I don't remember that. Wow.
And Harvey, you may remember this. Harvey is a character out of a sitcom, in a way. He's the old hand. He had lost his leg because of diabetes, so he had literally had a peg leg. And he would, you know, it would take him a minute to get out to the mound and back. but he owned he lived above a bar that his wife and wife's family owned. And he would serve drinks behind the bar after games. I mean, but he's so personable and everybody loved him so much. And he fused these characters together. And literally almost overnight when he took over, the team took off and went from below 500 to 20 games over 500 in a matter of 2.5 months, which is, that's a lot of wins.
Yeah, that really is.
It was a magical summer. Obviously all this is in the movie, and then, you know, but we get to the end of the year and there are all of these obstacles, baseball obstacles, human obstacles. There's injuries to key players. There's a 4-game series in Baltimore at the end of the season. All we have to do is win one. We lose the first three. So it's a win or go home game, and we pull it out. Travel out to Anaheim to play the Angels, who have all the all-stars in the world. Lose the first two games. Have to win three in a row to get to the World Series. Come home and do it. First team ever to come back from an 0-2 deficit. Then we go to the World Series and have this knock them down, drag out 7-game series with the St. Louis Cardinals. We're winning, going into the bottom of the sixth, and Ted Simmons tells us in the interviews, in the bottom of the sixth, he told himself, we're going to win the World Series. And then baseball happened, and we lost. And I think then you really, if we, what we remember, for those of us who remember, you know, teams that lose the World Series don't get parades,
right?
Except in Milwaukee.
Mm.
And the parade that the city and the state threw for them was larger than the parade that the St. Louis Cardinals threw.
How about that?
And so it's real, it's, you know, at its core, it's, you know, it's a relationship story, and the relationship is between the town, which was going through a recession and needed an uplift from the players, and they gave them that, and a team. And when they're at their lowest moment, guess who comes, you know, comes to lift them up?
Wow. That is, I mean, I just moved to Wisconsin. We're about the same age. And I remember all of it, not all of this, a lot of that I had forgotten, but what do you, man, you have the story of the season that the team had, which is almost enough for a film. But then you've got these characters, Gorman Thomas with the mustache and Robin Yount and Keane, like you just told. I mean, talk about having all the elements. My question is, actually, I should save this. We have to do a quick thing. Can you hang with us through the news, Sean? And we'll come back and talk more. All right. Sure. Think about this, though. Like, what is more interesting from a filmmaker standpoint, the characters you had or the actual year that the team had? Because that's great. And I'm surprised that you didn't make this 30 years ago, because you're such a fan. It's so great. So, all right, Sean Hannish is here. We're talking about his really cool documentary. Can't wait to see it. It's called Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. He's a native Wisconsinite, and we are talking movies with Sean. We'll do more of that after award-winning news here at Civic Media. I'm Pete Schwab. This is Nightlight. We are talking to Sean Hannish. He is the director of the really cool-looking documentary Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. And he will be in Wisconsin in a week to start preparations for the premiere, I believe, at Marcus Theaters. Sean, I asked you before the break, and I didn't mean that to sound snarky, but I am surprised it took you, like, this is over 40 years ago. This story is so close to you. Was it, how long was it in the works, and when did you know you were going to make this a film?
Well, Kelly Call, who produced the film with me, he over the last 8 to 10 years, he's been playing golf with Gorman Thomas, who was his childhood idol. And so, to be honest, Kelly, who at the time was the president of CBS, intimidated to play golf with Gorman.
Oh, that's funny.
And Kelly's one of my best friends, has been for almost 40 years. What he said was, when they go out golfing, every hole, Gorman would have a different story. And most of them were about all the guys going out drinking in different cities after games. So it's about 4 years ago, you know, we were early COVID, and Kelly and I were both a bit stir crazy. And he was like, you know, I think it might be time to make this Brewers film, because we had been talking about it. And so that's really what got the ball started. So we've been on it for 4 years. And it's interesting what you said about 30 years ago. Why wouldn't I make the film 30 years ago? The truth is, I don't think the players would have opened up the way they did 30 years ago.
Nice.
A number of them were still in baseball.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's listen, this isn't a gotcha documentary. These guys are all our heroes.
Right.
But they opened up their emotions in a way I don't think they would have been prepared to, you know, maybe even 20 years ago or perhaps even 10 years ago. I think it took, as I like to tell people, they were old. They're young enough to remember everything, every detail, and get really emotional, excited, and emotional about the season, and their teammates who they're like a brotherhood.
Yeah.
But they were old enough not to care what other people thought. So, you know, they're at a place in life where they're like, yeah, I'll tell you everything. I'll share everything I got. And that's what we got from them. We got it from all of them. And really Robin Yount in particular. We had an interview with Robin that lasted 3 hours, and he invited us into his home. He was the first interview we did. And he didn't know us from Adam, by the way. And he opened up in a way that afterwards his wife, Michelle, said, you know, Sean, he doesn't talk about these things. Most of these things he doesn't even talk about with me.
Wow.
Listen, I don't want to take anything away from all the interviews. We get such emotional interviews from Vuk and Ted and Gorman and like all of them. I mean, and listen, there's a ton of fun in the movie, but it's really grounded in this incredible human emotion that really, really comes, you know, 42 years later, they remember every pitch.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great point. You probably wouldn't have gotten the information out of them had you done it earlier. Like now they're, like you said, ready to talk, and they probably gave you so much more as subjects. That's really, that's a great answer. What do you think, aside from Robin Yount, was there anyone that was difficult or anyone that didn't give you much that you thought you might get from them?
Everybody gave us a little bit more than I had expected.
Okay.
So there's not anybody that underperformed okay. of the interviews we had at all. I would say, if you want to say who surprised me, I would say Jim Gantner surprised me. He, you know, I mean, everybody knows, oh, Jim Gantner, he had all the Gumby-isms, and he was, you know, yeah, you know, he's like, you know, the second incarnation of Yogi Berra. so incredibly articulate and so incredibly like grounded in, you know, his emotions and what he thought about the season. It surprised me just from an expectations standpoint. The hardest one to get was Ted Simmons, because Ted was reluctant. I think only because he had been inducted into the Hall of Fame the year before. And so he had spent like 18 months, and it was also postponed a year because of COVID. He spent like 18 months to 2 years doing interviews. And he was just like, I'm done. I'm not doing another interview. And fortunately, Robin called him and said,
nice.
You got to sit down with these guys. And he did. And his interview is, he's a genius. What I didn't know is while Harvey was the manager in the dugout, Ted Simmons was the manager on the field.
Really? That's so great. Isn't that great when you get something you weren't expecting? I mean, it's such a journey, right? I mean, I've never made a documentary, but I love talking to documentary filmmakers when they say stuff like what you just said. That's so fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's kind of the joy. You're right. It's the joy of the making.
So back, I kind of forgot, like in 82, you're still looking at County Stadium. And I remember I grew up 2 miles west of Wrigley Field before we moved to Wisconsin. Wow. And my mom's family lived in Milwaukee, and the tailgating we did at County Stadium, I have such fond memories of that. You know, you didn't do that at Wrigley. And then it became Miller Park, and now it's Family Field or something like that. What is your take on the transformation of where the Brewers play? What's your favorite?
I mean, you can't – the thing is, as a 14-year-old boy, and the years before and years after – when you go to a place like County Stadium with the culture of tailgating that was there, by the way, that still exists today. That totally still exists today. And you went into that, you know, that beautiful old, you know, kind of a little bit starting to fall apart stadium. Right. It was, but it had so much character,
charm.
so much. And so, I mean, you're talking to me who, you know, I grew up there. So I would say County Stadium. I mean, that said, I mean, Miller Park / American Family Field is an awesome place.
Great to watch stadium. Game. Yeah.
Many games there. And the tailgating is still as robust as ever. So I don't think we've lost that, you know, but it's different. Things change. The game has changed.
For sure. My guest is Sean Hannish. He is the director of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers, which premieres here in Wisconsin in a couple of weeks. So tell us, Sean, can people still get tickets? Where can they find out more information about the event?
Well, I mean, there's really two things, you know, important things to talk about. One is we are having a VIP screening with a number of the players from the 82 team who we interviewed, and that's going to be at the Marcus Majestic of Brookfield on Wednesday, the 11th of September.
Okay.
That's a VIP screening. You can get tickets at eventbrite.com and look up Just a Bit Outside, or you can go to our website, justabitoutside.com. I do want to tell people that part of the proceeds go to the Brewers Charitable, Brewers Community Foundation. And the Brewers have been announcing it on their telecasts lately, and we're getting close to sold out there.
Great.
So yeah. And then, there's another, but what we're going to do then, you know, once that we are going to have a public screening. This might be breaking news. I don't think, you know, anybody's said it yet.
Awesome. I'm not a news guy, but I love breaking news. Lay it on us.
It just kind of came to fruition in the last day.
Nice.
Is Thursday night. We are going to have Kelly and I are staying in town an extra night to do a Q&A. For the general public at regular movie ticket prices, not VIP ticket prices. For those who want to come out, we don't know exactly who, but we're going to have at least probably two of the players, maybe three of the players from the team join us for the Q&A, and they can come up and, you know, meet them, and if they care to meet us afterwards. That's Thursday night. I believe the screening is going to be 6:00.
Okay.
You know, we're dialing that all in. That'll be on the Marcus Theaters website. Or on, you know, you can get there also on justabitoutside.com.
And that'll be...
It's justabitoutsidethemovie.com.
Okay. Oh, gotcha. And that's at same theater in Greenfield, Marcus in Greenfield?
Same thing in Brookfield.
Yep. Sorry. Okay. All right.
And then the big release around the state is Friday the 13th.
Very nice.
Is the big release. And we're in 12 theaters throughout the state. Green Bay, Appleton, Oshkosh, Sheboygan, Madison, and 7 around Milwaukee.
I think that's great. So let me ask you something, Sean. You're like this, I was looking you up today. You like have this great career as a narrative storyteller, as a writer, director, and then you go and make this documentary. I'm fascinated by people that have, you know, kind of delved into both mediums. Are these films, is this easier than writing a script and sitting down and having to create every plot point? You kind of have the plot points there, but it seems like it's a lot more post-production work and editing. What are the differences between the two?
Well, you're spot on. I'll tell you the biggest difference is when you're making a narrative feature, and I've directed and produced three of them, and I wrote one of them, everything hangs on the script.
Yeah.
You know, the script is literally it's the coin of the realm. You get actors with the script. You get your crew with the script. You get money with the script. You get distribution basically based on the script and all those attachments. So, you know, there's a lot more R&D on the front end of a narrative feature film. Documentary may be easier to start because you're like, I got this great concept. But all the R&D happens as you and after you shot your material, because we had 45 hours of interviews. Ooh. We had 100 hours of footage, radio calls, television calls. We're working with 150 hours there. So you really, really rely on your post-production team. We have, our editor is, he's brilliant, Tim Calandrello, and his assistant Onika, really did an incredible work. Wait till you see the film and see the editing in this movie. I couldn't have asked for better. And it's also remembering it came from 145 hours of footage down to two.
Jeez.
You really appreciate the work that they've put in.
Yeah. You mentioned one of your films, and it sounds like it was very personal to you. Return to Zero. You've worked with some really big actresses, Minnie Driver, Michelle Monaghan. How was she, by the way? I love her. Was she great to work with?
Great. Michelle is a joy every day on
she's
set.
She's so good.
I couldn't, you know, she's from Iowa. It's like, I think we got along. That, yeah. We got along so well. So we were both like, hey, we're from the Midwest. she's a joy. So positive. Such a great influence also on the rest of the crew and the rest of the cast. Yeah, I'd work with her again in a heartbeat.
She's a force. I've liked her in everything I've seen her in. Any of those films you want to tell us where we can see? I think it was, I had all of them pulled up here. You got Zero, Return to Zero. You've got Judy's, St. Judy. Where can people see your stuff, Sean?
Well, right now, St. Judy, that's the one with Michelle Monaghan right. and Alfred Molina, Common, and Alfre Woodard. We're in that one. That's streaming currently on Peacock.
Okay.
And the other two films that I've done, the first two, Return to Zero, which was deeply, deeply personal. And I'm really grateful for Minnie Driver and her performance. She ended up getting nominated for an Emmy in this film, which is for an indie film that you make for $1 million to get an Emmy nom is insane.
That's wow.
Yeah, she anyway, that and the second film, Sister Cities, which also had a great cast and was a lot of fun to make. Those can be found on iTunes or Apple. I'm sorry, Apple is iTunes. Apple iTunes yeah. or Amazon for rent and purchase. So, yeah, I'd love for people to check them out. You know,
I love that you said. I love that you said before about the script because that's how I've always felt. Like you get notes from producers. Everybody has a note, and everybody, but they all need the script. If nothing yep. happens with the movie, at least you have a story. And yep. directors have nothing to direct and actors have nothing to act out. You know, I love that. And that's why I love talking to writers. Sean, can you stick around for just a couple more minutes? I want to ask you about Bob Uecker. And then I want to ask you what you're watching. So we'll do that next. And Sean Hanisch is here helping us close out Nightlight tonight. We'll have him for a couple more minutes when we come back. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. We have a couple more minutes here with director Sean Hanisch. His film is just a bit outside. It's about the 82 Brewers. It sounds like a great film. You can it premieres here in Wisconsin at Marcus Theaters September 13th. If you want more information about the film, go to justabitoutsidethemovie.com. They're also having a VIP event. There's all kinds of information available there, too. Sean, it's great to have you here. What was Bob Uecker like? Did you talk to him?
Oh, we did. We sat down with Bob Uecker and he, you know, he's incredible.
Yeah.
He's so sharp. I mean, this we're talking about like when we interviewed him, he was 89.
Wow.
And he's so still wicked sharp.
Yeah.
He's an amazing storyteller and a kind man. He actually wanted the interview to keep going, and he had to be reminded, hey, no, we got other things to do, Bob. But I think my favorite story he told great stories in there. They're in, you know, he's had such an interesting career.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from the baseball player to the Tonight Show to, you know, national broadcaster, lifelong broadcaster for the Brewers. He's just, you know, his television star. It's been amazing. But my favorite story is I brought my son. My son's name is Cannon. I brought him to the interview, and afterwards I said, you know, Mr. Uecker, I just wanted to introduce you to my son. His name is Cannon. He goes, oh, Cannon, how you doing? I'm Shotgun. I mean, he's that He's that fast. So
yeah, he was on the Tonight Show when I was a kid. I remember him telling a story about Boog Powell and the picture that he sent a picture and to a friend, and it said he captioned it in the picture, Boog Powell was holding a huge fish, and Bob Uecker captioned it. He said, "Boog Powell (parentheses left)" like he had to point out that he wasn't the fish. I mean, the guy's stories are endless, and I'm very envious that you got to talk to him. That's so great.
It was honestly, it wasn't lost on me in that moment that
yeah.
I had an opportunity to talk to and interview and have a nice conversation with, I mean, someone who, you know, let's hope he's with us and in doing baseball games for, you know, years and years and years to come.
Till he's 112. Yeah, for sure.
Please, we need him. We need him.
Absolutely. I will say Bob Uecker too. Like, I went to so many Dodger games. Vin Scully is a guy who his voice just perfectly complimented the picture and what you were seeing. It was the perfect compliment. Bob Uecker is now, to me, the national treasure after Vin Scully. He was already anyway, but I'm saying, like, he adds just a little bit of Vin, but also some humor and some a little more character, which works for him, you know? All right. So, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, no, some of my favorite games to listen to. When I was in my, you know, well, when I lived there, teenage years and early 20s,
yeah,
were the games where either the Brewers were blowing a team out or the Brewers, unfortunately, were being blown out, because you'd have innings of him basically doing stand-up on the radio, just keep people entertained yeah. and tuned in. And it was always fresh and new.
Oh, that's so great. All right, one more question for you, buddy. Sean, yeah. I love that you're a writer and movies and TV. That's what we talk about here on Nightlight. What are you watching? What can you recommend? Are you binge-watching anything or seen any of the summer blockbusters?
I love, you know, binge-watching.
Same.
Have I seen the summer blockbusters? You know, I've seen two movies recently that I really, really enjoyed. One was A Quiet Place Day One.
Yeah.
Was shockingly great.
Really liked it. Same.
I mean, I went in with pretty low expectations. Not that I didn't like the first one and I didn't see the second one, but that thing was tight.
Agreed. I mean,
the other one that I've seen recently that I think came out earlier this year was Challengers.
Oh, yeah. I like Challengers, too.
And that was a really good one. Again, exceeded my expectations. And again, it's a tennis movie, but it's really about relationships.
Right.
That was great. As far as television goes, I mean, I know it stopped a little while back, but Succession, I think, is the best show of the last 10 years, HBO.
Right. Nice. And
I just finished watching season 3 of The Bear, which, you know, I enjoy. And then I'm really looking forward to The Righteous Gemstones coming back.
Nice. Oh, those are great. I agree with you on Quiet Place. I liked that it wasn't Krasinski and Emily Blunt. I liked it. I didn't really know those people. I loved that. And I agree. Very tight. And Challengers, you know, my kids are older and they loved, their generation loved Challengers. I watched it and I have to admit, I didn't really even know what I was watching. I was like, I think I really like this. And then when I ruminated on it a bit, I'm like, yeah, that was a really different and really cool movie. So
totally different. Yeah.
Hey, this was fun, Sean. I hope you're not a stranger. Come back anytime. It was great to talk to you and to get to know you. And I cannot wish you enough luck with this film. It just sounds great. And I cannot wait to see it.
Thanks so much, Pete. Thanks for the great conversation. And I look forward to you seeing the film.
All right. Same. Break a leg. Right. Thanks, Sean.
Take care.
That's Sean Hannes. Check out his film. Just a Bit Outside. It's the story of the 1982 Brewers, which sounds like, this is going to sound weird, Conrad, because everybody would have wanted the Brewers to win, obviously, but sometimes it's almost like more of a Cinderella story, or there's more heart and I don't know, in the fact that they lost and still had this huge parade. That is so cool.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we would have liked the Brewers to win, but yeah, I agree. Like, I honestly didn't know that they still threw a parade for that. And I think it's awesome.
I forgot that. Yeah, I agree. That's and I love how you said we. Like, you were part of the team.
I wasn't even a thought then, and I was there.
I have friends that, like, played college sports. One of them, it drove him absolutely bananas. He hated when people said we. I'm like, you got to calm down, man. They're just being supportive, and they're living vicariously, and that's what the whole damn thing's about. Sports is entertainment. It's like what we talk about here every night. It's something that brings people together, and you know, you live vicariously. That's what you do. So calm down. And you know what? He never made the pros anyway, so he can take a hike. I'm half kidding. All right, tomorrow, who do we have on the show tomorrow? We got a great show tomorrow. It's a Bar Band Friday night. Terry yes. Barr will be here bringing new music like she always does that is excellent. And Jeff Mitchell is going to be here to talk about Old Fashioned Fest. Yep. It's about time we talked about Old Fashions right? on this show. Yeah.
It's going to make you go off the wagon.
You think so? It's been 20 months, buddy. Hey, if I didn't go off the wagon when that guy from Cheese Curd Fest was here talking about whiskey and cheese curds, my yeah. mouth was literally watering. Yeah, I was doing an intermittent fast. And I almost walked across the street to a bar and ordered both of them. But I think I can make it through tomorrow night. So that'll be fun. Terry Barr, Jeff Mitchell. Thank you, everybody. I'd like to thank Sean Hanisch. That was a really fun talk. And Logan Rogie from Travel Wisconsin. Thank you for all your texts. We will be back tomorrow night with more Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good night, Wisconsin. Life can change.